Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
It is Sunday, June 19th, Father's Day. Welcome to the Kudzu Vine. This is Tim Shiflett coming to you from the mountains of northwest Georgia, the very hot mountains, as it turns out today. David couldn't be with us tonight, but Catherine certainly is. Welcome, Catherine.
Greetings from the very hot metro, from Atlanta, right in the middle of Atlanta, yeah. Where it's also quite hot.
Yeah. And sitting in for David tonight, we would like to welcome a good friend of the Kudzu Vine who's been on with us before from Alabama, Tina Coggin. Welcome, Tina.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
All right. Now, in a few minutes, a candidate in the special election to fill the state house seat, District 113, Dan Matthews, will be joining us. And while we're waiting for Dan, we're going to talk a little politics, and no better place to start than the great state of Georgia and our esteemed governor's office. It seems like every time we turn around, there's some new story out there about some possible scandal involving this governor. The one I wanted to jump on to start with concerns the State Transparency and Campaign Finance Commission. According to a leaked memo, which had an email address to the Executive Secretary, Stacey Kauberman, the FBI had offered to help in the investigation of the governor's office that they were carrying on. Now, next thing you know, she and her top assistant had both resigned. She claimed she was forced to resign because they just whacked her pay so low that she couldn't afford to stay on. Now, the chair of the commission, Patrick Millsaps, was recently reappointed by the governor, and then all this happened, and he refused to sign on to the subpoenas that Kauberman had prepared to gain access to the governor's financial records. Tina, let's give you the first crack at this guy. Is this what this looks like, an effort to stop this investigation in its tracks?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, and I don't think it's clear that she actually resigned, and that's what's scary too. So no, this is absolutely a way to stop this investigation, no doubt about it.
Well, Catherine, we have groups as diverse as Common Cause and the Tea Party screaming their heads off that the governor's office is trying to essentially put this commission out of business. Are they right?
Well, I think, yes. I mean, you can't really deny it. They're cutting the budget. They're limiting access by not, you know, agreeing to sign off on these subpoenas. And they seem to be creating an environment of fear an environment of fear. She did not resign. What happened was they had a meeting and he asked her to resign and she didn't. And then in following the meeting, the guy Millsap said that she had resigned, but she hadn't. And she has accepted, allegedly, my understanding is that after the fact, she has now resigned, but she's going to stay on as the executive, as like the administrative assistant or something, until such time as they find a replacement or something like that. I think that was the last thing I read, but there hasn't been very much coverage on it over the weekend. So, I mean, it was all breaking sort of Thursday and Friday. But this goes hand in hand with another sort of questionable ethics situation with Governor Deal on his platinum level with Delta Airlines. They just gifted him with platinum level status, so he can have free upgrades to first class and business class, access to the you know clubs, the membership clubs in the airports, waiving of fees and all that kind of stuff. They say that it was not a gift to Governor Deal, but that it was a gift to the governor of Georgia, to the state of Georgia, as a way of encouraging economic development. I don't know how first class travel encourages economic development, but whatever.
I'm sure it wouldn't have nothing to do with the fact that Delta managed to get a nice little tax break.
$30 million tax break.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, that's just wonderful. But doesn't it seem, guys, that every time you turn around, and this goes back to his days in Congress, every time you turn around, it is something with this guy. Something seems to be nipping at his heels, and you just wonder when something's going to finally just explode on him, right?
Well, I saw a piece in the, I think it was in the AJC this morning, where they suggested that while he was in Congress, he was one of 435 people. So the spotlight was not always on him.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's the governor of a, you know, major, you know, a very well-populated, very strong economic state, and he's going to get a lot more attention. And that might not be a good for him ethically.
Well, and against this backdrop, the governor his office has apparently decided to declare war on some media outlets, particularly Channel 5 over here, who has done a lot of the reporting of all of this. So, Tina, the governor's office has blamed many of their problems on the media, which, of course, as we know, is a time-honored political tradition. With all of these things nipping at the governor's heels, do you think that sort of strategy would work?
Oh, I think it's been working. I mean, they do it all the time. And but, you know, I think you hope that something will stick, because, like you said, this is something that he had ethics problems before he even ran for governor. And I'm sure that that got brought out in the gubernatorial campaigns. And then now you've got this, and even I read something this morning that said even an organizer for the Tea Party Patriots said that these gifts were extremely disappointing. I mean, if you have a limit, which is my understanding, he passed the law on what, you know, what a contribution or what a gift could be. And, you know, a gift of anything of value exceeding $25. Well, this platinum or diamond, whatever this upgrade is what I think it's worth about valued at $8,000. So the fact, you know, for him to sit and say, but yeah, I think that when they throw it off and they just say, oh, it's just, you know, it's being misconstrued or blamed it on the media, then I do think that it does work. It's been working. But I think that maybe it's starting to stick, and I don't see how you can have – I mean, I've seen this in Alabama. I've seen this in others in Alabama. You know, you talk about ethics, and the Republican Party is supposed to be the poster child for ethics, and then you have a blatant violation of their own ethics law, and it's the media's fault. So that's
exactly. Oh, yeah. It's always the media's fault, isn't it?
I just have to say that if you haven't read Jay Bookman's piece on it from Friday, it is brilliant, where he talks about the Transparency Commission. I really recommend everyone read it, all our listeners. It's not very long. It's brilliant. It's hilarious because he talks about the Transparency Committee and how they can't get any – they won't answer any questions. And everything's hidden. And they have all these private meetings to, you know, I mean, it's just brilliant. I love him anyway, but this is a particularly good one.
Well, Catherine, about this commission, with all that has now happened, where does this all go now? Is this commission
useless from this point on, or will there be an outcry about this? But because we mentioned that it really hasn't caught hold in the media yet, so.
Well, you know, if it was going to catch hold, wouldn't it have caught hold during the election when we when all that stuff about Nathan Deal was? I mean, I can't even remember it all. There was so much.
Oh yeah.
He was so ethically challenged, and it all came. I mean, it came out. It might not have been as out as widely as we had would have hoped to, because it cost so much money to do that. But I just think people, you know, I've often said, I'm sure I've said it on the show, that I think people expect this stuff from politicians.
They all do it.
It further exacerbates the idea that all politicians are crooks. And that's what's heartbreaking about it, because, you know, we all know that's not true. You know, we all know Republicans and Democrats who are, you know, upstanding, really interested in public service. And, you know, they do this. I mean, it's not like a big paying job, you know, being a legislator in Georgia. And they all, you know, make a lot of many make a lot of sacrifices in order to serve the state. But these ethics challenges and ethics violations always get, you know, attention, but nothing ever gets resolved. I mean, we're not going to see any change in that commission, I don't think.
Yeah.
Because the Democrats don't have any power to do anything.
Tina, you've worked in several states. Do you find that you hear this everywhere you go? Well, they all do it. There's the caught and the uncaught. You know, there really ain't no difference in them, so it doesn't matter who we vote in and blah, 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 blah. You hear this a lot.
I do hear this, but, you know, but then and again, I think Georgia went through a lot of the same thing that we had happened in Alabama in 2010, where people are disgruntled and they're unhappy. So it's whoever's in control is who they're going to lash out at. And so they can say there's not a dime's worth of difference between them. But, you know, in Alabama, we had some really good legislators that were upstanding, that had done good jobs, just like y'all did in Georgia, that went down. And over in Arkansas, they elected a dead man. I mean, a man that had been dead for several weeks before the election even took place. And one of our sheriffs in Alabama had a saying that a one-legged child molester would have been elected in Alabama had he had a had an R by his name. And so, you know, and we're facing that kind of challenge again going into 2012. You know, we're going to have, but, you know, they're in charge now, and this whole thing about transparency and ethics that they ran on is they're the ones that they talk the talk, but, you know, we as Democrats have to hold their feet to the fire, whether it's having one of the things we ran across in Alabama is that grant money that's given out by the state. You can't find where that community service grant money, which is their discretionary funds, there's no tracking service for that. You know, and that's something that, you know, we need to be tracking, and it needs to be, you know, the budget. Push for the budget to be online. People seem to want to talk about what money is being spent. My thing is, show me where my money's being spent. Taxpayers got upset about, and, you know, the legislature giving themselves a raise, and, you know, which is fine, but, you know, we need to know where the money that we're paying in is actually going, not where lobbyists are giving. I mean, that's one thing, yes, to track that, but if we're going to spend the money tracking where lobbyists are spending their money, wouldn't we rather want to watch and see where the legislature is spending our money, our tax dollars?
Yeah, you know, Catherine, Tina brought up a very good point there, and that's the fact that one party is in firm control of the situation here in this state, and this is the party that a decade ago was beating Democrats over the head with the ethics stuff, and now we see all of these possible scandals and violations surfacing. Is the governor going to skate through simply because his party is in firm charge and he's got that R behind his name?
I think so. I think that like I said, you know, if we had been concerned about this, we wouldn't have elected him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think that I don't see, you know, I don't see any Republicans coming up and saying, oh, you know, he shouldn't have done that. You know, you don't see any outcries from, I mean, there has been a little bit of an outcry from some of the Tea Party activists, but, you know, that they don't have nearly as much influence as everyone thinks they do. And I just don't see, you know, they can just fire everybody or change the rules or, you know, redo the commission or, I mean, that's what they did at the beginning, right? They just changed the whole, they defunded and changed the name of the Ethics Commission and just sort of made it a legless, you know, nothing they can really do.
And with that, I believe our guest has joined us. Mr. Matthews, are you on?
Yes, sir, I am. Just wanted to say we got a Tea Party candidate running here in the 113th. She has not really come out and said, I am a Tea Party patriot, but it's generally accepted that Sarah Bell is one of my opponents who's on the far right of the local Republican three-way race against my lone Democratic race in the special election that's coming up on Tuesday.
All right. Well, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, Dan. We appreciate you joining us. And we have a first question that we like to ask all of our guests, and that is we like to ask them to provide some background information for our listeners. So I wonder if you could start out tonight by telling us a little bit about yourself.
Certainly. I grew up in the great state of Iowa, although I am a sixth-generation Georgian. My mother helped move the Iowa caucuses to the forefront of the nation, and she ran for state legislature in 1970, and it was something that I fondly remembered in a great process. Hers wasn't a special election, but she had much more success as a campaign manager working for the likes of George McGovern and Morris Udall, amongst others. But I remember Jimmy Carter coming knocking on my door and talking to my Georgian father about wanting to get him to vote for him. And I came down here, went to the University of Georgia in 1981, and have lived here and loved it ever since, and have a grandmother that passed away in Atlanta in the early 90s that was sort of the driving Miss Daisy type, who had a first private nursery school in the state of Georgia in Druid Hills. And my father moved back down here soon thereafter, and he recently passed as well. I have an 11-year-old son, attend school in Athens, and I love living in Oconee County, and I've been here for the better part of 20 years, either working or living, and have been a chairman of the Democratic Committee twice, and was happy to drop my hat in the race at the last second with the help of a lot of folks, and have had a great time doing it and learned something every day and every stage of the way. Whether it's going to different churches or different gatherings or groups of folks that I might not know otherwise encounter. It's been a wonderful process, and I know I've definitely shaped the debate, if nothing else, in this election, the special election, and it's to replace Hank Huckabee, who, of course, has taken over the Board of Regents for the University System of Georgia, and it'll be interesting to see how whoever gets the nod, and my guess is it's going to be a runoff, because we've got three Republicans that are going to divide up the Republican majority around here, and I think I can sneak in as a second place, possibly, maybe even first, in making it to a runoff, which would be July 19th.
Okay, and for our listeners who don't know, describe the 113th district and where it's located and what towns are in it and all of that.
It is in, consists of all of Oconee County, which is directly below Athens-Clarke County. We have four precincts, or the better part of four precincts of Athens-Clarke County, including the city of Winterville proper and Bogart city limits and the area around Timothy Road, and then the far southern part of 1A, or 1C, excuse me, that is the southernmost part of Clarke County. None of the Clarke County districts are particularly contiguous, so it's been gerrymandered, and the thought is, of course, with reapportionment, that they're going to start at the arches and slice Clarke County open like a pie, go from there. But It will be interesting to see how it does go, but it also includes a section of Oglethorpe County west of Crawford coming back over towards Athens, then a chunk of Morgan County basically starting at the northern tip of Madison city limits and then kind of moving up in a V-shape to include Bostwick and Appalachian, some Rutledge, and some of those smaller towns in a very rural area. It's a very rural district. It's got lots of farms. It's got $51 million worth of ornamental nursery farms and tree farms and whatnot. Oconee County is a bedroom community for Athens, of course. It's got Watkinsville, and then Bishop is a sleepy little town, and High Shoals is another little area that's down in the border with Walton County. Now, Walton County is not in the district, but we've had an interesting time traveling to and from. And, you know, a lot of people have been realizing how gerrymandered the 113th has been, and sort of a portent of what things are yet to come. And I think that's working in my behalf in trying to get voters to turn out for this election. And of course, there are a lot of really motivated voters in Athens-Clark because of Doug McKillop's recent transformation from a Democrat to a Republican. So I think I've got that working in my favor as well.
All right, Dan. Also on with us tonight are Catherine Smith and Tina Coggin. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to them for some questions. And we'll start with Catherine. Go ahead, Catherine.
Thanks a lot for being on with us tonight, and happy Father's Day. Sounds like
thank
your father.
You.
So I appreciate you taking time out of this important day to be on with us. I saw something in somewhere today, I thought it was in the AJC, but now I can't find it, about a candidate forum where there was a discussion about the HB87. Was
mm-hmm.
that you? Were you at that?
Yes, I've been
at the
candidate forums. There was one that was a day before I qualified that was all Republican, but other than that, I have been to all the candidate forums. And House Bill 87, for instance, will ask all the candidates, is there a single piece of legislation or any piece of legislation that that was passed in the last go-round that you're not too pleased with or you would have voted against? And I'm the only one that's come out and said that I was opposed to anything in particular, and I pounded the desk about House Bill 87 and the $300 million of rotting vegetables and fruit in South Georgia, and it even stretches up into Oconee County, as we've got a good number of peach orchards up here. And we do have a fairly large Hispanic population, but more like that which you would see in Athens-Clark and some other areas, but not nearly as pervasive. It's not like a Hall County, but it's got a lot of folks that do some of the more menial work. There's a Home Depot where people go and hire legals and illegals for doing roofing and gardening and those kinds of things. And Oconee County has the lowest unemployment rate in the state and has had it for about the last 20 months. And but there aren't a lot of super well-paying jobs here. A lot of people commute to Athens, Clark, and Atlanta and other places. It's in between Athens and Atlanta, but just barely. And folks do have a great deal of interest in here. And, of course, one of the opponents that I'm running against is a person who ran a failed bank into the ground, North Georgia Bank. And that's sort of been an interesting symbolism. And, of course, he's taken lots of flack for that, and I think justifiably, but with 63 banks having closed just in this year alone and four that have affected Oconee County, it's definitely been something that has been on a lot of people's minds and a lot of questions. But yes, I was against House Bill 87, and no one else has particularly come out. They've all said, it's a flawed, it's imperfect, but it's a good first step, that kind of thing. But I don't really want to quote.
Yeah, I wonder how they're
going to
feel when their Vidalia onions either aren't available or cost, you know, $6 a pound.
$6 a piece even, yeah.
$6 a piece, whatever. How's the campaign going? What kind of campaign are you running? Are you on the ground? Are you, what's the scoop?
I've been running as interested in a campaign as I can. I obviously don't have quite the corporate backing that some of my opponents have, and I've raised a couple thousand where my opponents have got 20,000, at least in the last reporting. That was the banker guy, Chuck Williams, had the most money. But yeah, big surprise there. But they're, I've been doing a lot on social media. I've been doing a lot trying to get the word out on Facebook and other means. I've been getting a lot of good earned media. I've written for more than 24 newspapers over the years in like a 60-mile radius of Athens. Then I had my own liberal talk show on a local AM radio station, and am fairly well known in the letters to the editors and the comments in the Athens Banner Herald and other newspapers. So I've been trying to get as much work done behind the scenes in the past. Now I'm kind of trying to make it, bring it to the forefront. Weird little things like Sprite has got a contest online that they're having to see who's going to get the free basketball court rebuilt, and I entered our local park in that months and months and months ago before thinking I was even going to enter this race, but just turns out we won. And
congratulations.
Yeah,
I've never heard of anyone winning anything on all those Facebook contests. That's great. Congratulations.
Right.
That's a great
start. Right, LeBron James that I can thank. So I guess LeBron gets some consolation for losing to Dallas, but he gets to build a help pay for a basketball court in Sony County.
Well,
but,
I seem to notice that you redeveloping some of the recreation areas in Oconee County is really important to you. And so this is a big step, you know, get a basketball court. That's nice. And what other facilities are you trying to get in place for your constituents?
Well,
potential constituents
for this race was the Elder Mill Covered Bridge, which is one of the last covered bridges in the state of Georgia, and it was originally preserved by Jimmy Carter in 1970. He got some grants for this area to keep it, and it's never been an official park or a set-aside area. There's a historic marker down there, and there's some other things, and it's deep within the rural part of Oconee County, pretty far off the beaten path, but folks know about it, and folks love it, and plans had been drawn up to make a park there, a county park. Well, and the county kind of blew it when they didn't buy a home that was for sale right next to it. And people have used the Watson Mills State Park, which is over in Oglethorpe County, which is also in part of the district, as sort of a template for what we might or might not do. Now, obviously, state parks are going to be low in the priority when you've got 10,000 people dying on Highway 316 and one of the worst designed interstate, well, it's not an interstate, but one of the worst designed state highways. That's, I think, taking more precedence at this point. But it's definitely something. I've worked in the recreation department for Oconee County. I've always been very partial to that. I coach youth sports. My son's a big soccer and basketball player, and it's something that's always been near and dear to my heart. And other candidates have suggested gutting the recreation department, as you know, and that's not even something that a state legislator would really look at. But it is something that I want to support Oconee County as much as I possibly can, to try to help the Morgan County and Western Oglethorpe and Southern Clark as well. You know, I've lived or worked in all four counties at one point or another, and I don't think any of my opponents can say that.
Well, that's great. I'm going to pass this off to Tina now. Tina?
Hey. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tina.
Good luck. I know it's coming
Thank
up
you.
Really quickly. And I was reading an article today that you said that this is a special election. What is the chatter? I mean, is there very much? Is there excitement? Do people seem to be paying attention to this? Because I know I've done special elections in a vacation time. This is when people are just not really thinking about elections. So what do you have any idea on turnout?
We're thinking 15% to 20%. I think if there were any of the beer and wine referendums for Sunday sales on the ballot, I'd be sunk. Because usually Oconee County gets 80% turnout in those races, and heavy in the conservative Christian area. But I've been very pleasantly surprised with the amount of Republican small business owners and restaurant owners and people like that have turned out and have supported me and sought me out. And I think there's been a real groundswell of people to come my way that might not normally be considered in the Democratic column, and they're kind of realizing that the mess that the Republicans have gotten us in over the last decade now, and that it might be time to send someone else with a different message to Atlanta to try to shake things up a little bit, if nothing else. I've kind of maintained a small L libertarian stance on some issues, and you know, done the more traditional Democratic Party of Georgia type position on others, and it's cobbled together an interesting mix of, like I said, business owners, bicyclists, libertarians, Democratic activists, African Americans, women, soccer moms, soccer dads, you know, different folks from all over, and it's been a very pleasant surprise for me is seeing how open-minded and intelligent a lot of the voters are from the 113th. And, you know, my standard pitch and ploy lately has been to go to these debates and forums and ask people, okay, how many folks in the audience have ever voted for a Democrat? And usually you get about three-quarters of the folks that will admit it. And even at some Republican events, I've asked them that. You know, you have to pull out the Sam Nunns and the Frank Stansels and the Jimmy Carters and whatnot to elicit some of these reactions, but they will fess up to it. I don't think there's a Republican over the age of 50 that wasn't a Democrat at one time or another, but they might be.
That's true.
No, that's true. Absolutely. You said you on the money thing, raising money. Where could people send contributions? What do they need to do if they are listening right now and want to get you some money?
Well, I've got a blog called Oconee Democrat. It's oconeedemocrat.blogspot.com, and that has a secure PayPal link. If you want to do PayPal yourself and bypass that, you can just enter my email address, which is danmatt@hotmail.com. Of course, remember the two T's, danmatt@hotmail.com. Or we've got a new Vote Dan Matthews website that just got up, and that's there. And or you can send me traditional snail mail. My home address is 1081 Katy, like the girl's name, K-A-T-I-E, 1081 Katy Lane, Watkinsville, Georgia, 30677. I've received an amazing amount of support from folks in Oconee and Clark and Morgan and Oglethorpe, and I've been deeply humbled and amazed and very pleasantly surprised every step of the way. You know, I get the biggest contributions I got were like $250 from the bass player for REM. So, you know, it's gone down from there, but I appreciate their generosity and support. And when I first came here, I was fortunate enough to see their very first show at the church back in 1980. I was visiting as a junior in high school, and I saw this band playing across the street in the church. I thought, well, heck, I'll go check that out. And that, you know, I fell in love with the music scene from there, and remained for the political scene, and love living here. And it's been a great experience for me.
Well, what over the next like 48 hours leading up to Tuesday, what can people do to help? Do you have are you phone banking? Is there something that you want to do, a call for volunteers? Because I know that special elections, you tend to get a lot of, you don't get a lot of attention on them, but volunteers that want to be democratically active, can they do to help you out of it? I know send money, but what else can they do?
We have been doing a whole lot of door-to-door. We've been doing a whole lot of calling. We've been trying to get the word out. I've been standing on street corners with signs and with my son and everywhere I can and getting that kind of thing. But, yes, the person who's my campaign manager is Patsy Harris, who lives in the real Buckhead in Morgan County. But she comes up. She's also the 10th District committee chair. And she's done a fantastic job coordinating a lot of different efforts. I've gotten some amazing help from Don Weigel at the Georgia House and Rashad Ritchie and some other folks have been very inspirational for me in getting this along. But, yes, Rashad's coming up with a bunch of folks and going to be knocking on doors in southwestern Clark County. And I can put them in touch with them, or you can get hold of Patsy, and I think her phone number 706-342-1011, and she'll put you to work right away, I'm sure. We've been you know, what we were lacking in money, we're making up for in manpower and woman power and every other kind of power. So it's been a great process. And, the next 48 hours is all adrenaline. And, again, I'm thinking it's going to be a runoff here. And so we'll be doing it all over again in July 19th. But I just want to make sure you let your friends know who live in Oconee County and the surrounding areas to be sure to get out to vote on Tuesday.
Awesome. So you said that to call, to get in touch with Patsy or Don Lively,
right,
or you. Okay, great. Kathleen?
I'm all set.
Okay.
Okay, we'll jump back to me then. Dan, I would like to ask you about one thing before you get off.
Sure. You mentioned, of course, that you are essentially a bedroom community. Our part of the district is, of Athens. And with Athens, of course, comes the University of Georgia. And so the question I'm asking is, obviously, the future of the university system over in your area would be a huge issue for your voters. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. The Hope Scholarship issue unto itself is just going to a matter of great contention, and I'm the only person so far that really wants to maintain it the way it was, or, you know, and also have an income cap to, you know, if you're making them, families making $1 million a year, you shouldn't have to get the Hope Scholarship, I would think, and I prefer the grade point average of 3.2. I mean, one thing we've seen in this area a great deal is an explosion of small colleges that have sort of fed off the people flunking out of the University of Georgia. It's been a very odd circumstance. And we have a branch of Gainesville State College here that I think ought to be called Watkinsville State and have its own little branch. And you know, now that we've got the Georgia Medical College coming in on Prince Avenue, what used to be the normal school for teachers, I think we ought to have more nursing and health science-related industries and help hospital majors for administrators and things. I know they've had to go to Atlanta and things before. I'd worked at the University Health Center for a number of years and learned a great deal working over there with a lot of doctors and stuff. And I'm just glad that we're taking an active leadership in trying to solve some of Georgia's medical care problems in around Athens. And I hope that we can continue to do so and solve the water and the jobs and the other economic issues, get the brain train going, do that kind of thing. It's, you know,
there you go.
A lot of expense, but I don't want to raise taxes unless we have some kind of horrible disaster like what happened in Joplin or Tuscaloosa. And anything short of that, I'm not going to vote to raise taxes in any way, shape, or form. And I think the Republicans, by and large, have raised taxes and raised fees and done a lot of backdoor kinds of things there. And one of the big issues of this campaign has been toll roads on 316, and I'm dead set against any kind of tolls on 316. We definitely need to do something to redesign it, but I'd like to see the T-SPLOST money put to work on that initially. I think we had a Chinese couple the other day that lived in the district that died out on 316, and you know, it's a shame that anyone has to perish on that road the way it's been designed. And I think it's just something that we have to go to work right away and try to fix as quickly as possible.
Well, Dan, we will be watching your election with the greatest of interest. We appreciate you taking your time out on Father's Day to be here with us tonight. We wish you well, good luck, and we certainly hope you'll be back with us again, maybe this time as a member of the Georgia Legislature.
Indeed, I look forward to being your Georgia General Assembly connection, but thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir.
Good night.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All righty. Well, we had about, that was an excellent interview. We had about 10 different categories of things we were going to talk about tonight, ladies. So far, we have made it through one. But we're going to stay in Georgia. Topics, it seems like almost on a weekly basis, we're talking about Herman Cain in some form. And we just keep waiting for this guy to just fade away or something. After all, this is a guy who has never held elective office in his life. He's an African-American in a nearly all-white conservative party. And yet, in the latest national polling, there is Herman Cain at 12%, running third in the GOP field. Catherine, what is it about this guy that makes him do so well with so many Republican voters?
I haven't got a clue. I don't get it. You know, I don't get it. I used to, I've confessed to this before, and I will confess again. I do listen to talk radio, and since the only talk radio there is the right-wing talk radio, when I'm in the car in the evening by myself, coming back from a meeting or whatever, I like to listen to talk radio. So I used to listen to Herman Cain. He's not on anymore, but, yeah, now we have Eric Erickson in his place, which is a lovely, it's such a joy. But I used to listen to him, and he did not make any sense to me. Like, he just rambles, and I was like, this guy is crazy. That's like always my response to him was always, like, what the heck is he talking about? But I think, sometimes I think the response to him is sort of a reaction to President Obama, that there's some belief that if the Republicans run an African-American, though he calls himself an American black man.
A black American? Okay, yeah.
American black, I think, whatever. I think there's some belief that if the GOP runs a African-American candidate, that it'll be somehow a different, it'll set things up in a better way for the GOP. I don't know. I can't really speak to that. It doesn't make any sense to me. But, and I think some people just, there's this desire for a certain population to have the government run like a business. And I think most of those people have never really don't really understand how much waste there is in business, much more waste in business than in government, in my opinion. And the skills and the demands and the goals of running a government are very, very different than running a corporation or running a company or even running a small restaurant. I mean, it's the demands are very different. So I've never understood that. Like, I've never understood that. Those are my two ideas.
Yeah, you think maybe he's a red meat kind of guy, Catherine, and they feed off of that, or?
Well, yeah, there is that. He doesn't seem to have much. He's not really very politically correct, and people respond to that. He'll say almost anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well, Tina, you've seen all kind of candidates in a lot of different places. What's your take on this guy? Will he fade away, or will he hang around and be maybe a major player in this nomination fight next year?
I don't know that he'll be a major player. I think we're going to see him. He's going to be around for a little bit, and I think that there is that, we were talking about the people not seeing a big difference between Democrats and Republicans. I think the fact that he has no baggage, that he's kind of an outsider, he hasn't been in the spectrum, appeals to people who see, who are seeing basically retread, what they consider to be retread politicians. So he is fresh and he is different. And I think that he'll kind of stick around. And I think that there's a part, it's almost like, see, we're really not, it's almost like they're, I don't even want to say this, but it's almost like, I think there are certain Republicans who say, well, it's not because Obama's black, I'd vote for this guy. So that's probably, there is almost a knee-jerk there, I think, for some people.
Yeah.
But I think it is this lack of political baggage. I mean, you look at the field and you've either, seen he's just fresh and he's different. I mean, he's obviously very different from anything the Republicans have put forward before.
Yeah, that much is certain. You know, while we're kicking around Georgia politicians, let's just keep on. A few minutes ago, I mentioned, of course, that in the intro of the show that this is Father's Day, as we all know. And the job of father, to me, if I were ranking the toughest jobs, I would rank the job of father as the fourth toughest job out there. Number one, of course, to me, is that of being a mother. Number two has got to be those guys on Deadliest Catch on the Crowd, folks, okay? And number three, to me, and this is going to get us into our next fun person to talk about, has got to be the campaign manager for Newt Gingrich, okay?
Well,
earlier, I mean, just a minute ago, we talked about a dramatic rise for one Georgia Republican, Herman Cain. Now we have the other side. Newt Gingrich, in the space of about a month, has seen his campaign implode, and that's putting it charitably. He made some statements that some Republicans did not like. He has had a bunch of negative press about his lavish lifestyle. He took a fancy vacation instead of campaigning. And then to top everything off, about all of his staff just quit him. And as a result of all this, he is now languishing in the single digits in the polls. Tina, is this guy done or can he come back?
Oh, I hope he's done. And I reading what I've read about, you know, him going to Greece and taking his vacation and lack, I mean, when your whole staff walks out because you're not, you know, raising money or committed to the campaign, I just don't think he's going to be able to recover. I really do think he's probably going to be done. And I want to say something. We've been talking about Father's Day, and this is totally off topic, but it's also Juneteenth. So, but there's, I think that Newt, I hope he's done, and he continues to drop in the polls. And if he can't get his campaign together, then, you know, there's nothing there. So I think he's probably on the slippery slope, sliding fast down the hill. He's come back before. I mean, he's had things, but
yeah.
I hope that he's done.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I've had this guy. I've campaigned against this guy working in people's campaigns that ran against him, and we've had him killed off I don't know how many times, and he's like a cat or something. Catherine, look, you and I have probably spent, what would you say, about a year's worth of time on this show talking about this one guy over the last couple of years. What do you make of Newt Gingrich's madness in his campaign? Is this just Newt being Newt?
Well, you know, I when I read about that, the campaign, you know, sort of mutiny, I like to think of it since it was sort of like going hand in hand with his Greek island cruise. I was like, the guy's toast. I mean, he can't. But I read, I think we may have talked about this last week too. I read somewhere that he said, well, now I can run the kind of campaign that I want to run. Talk about spin doctor. Like, he said, oh, now I can run the people's campaign. I'm like, dude, you've got a $500,000 line of credit at Tiffany. This is not ever going to be a people's campaign. I mean, you know, I don't have any, I can't have any hate for a Tiffany's credit account. I honestly can't. But, the idea of Newt Gingrich running a people's campaign when he can't even speak a sentence that most of the people in the country can understand is, like, beyond me. But, you know, got to give the dude credit for, you know, spin. But, yeah, I think he's toast. I mean, he might hang around just to, you know, be a pain in the neck for everybody else, but I don't think he's going to go very far. I think his numbers are going to remain low and go probably lower, but he might just hang around.
You just mentioned a very important thing, that Professor Gingrich is the type of person who actually lectures us one like a professor would, using words that William F. Buckley would have used in some of his best-selling books. And I've got to wonder, do you think one of his failings here is that the average Republican voter just can't identify with him?
I absolutely think he's very arrogant. I think he's very arrogant in the way he speaks and the way he, like you said, lectures. He is very, I mean, I've spent my whole life around professors, and he is very professorial to his own damage. I mean, I think I often, when I hear him speak, I just think, why is he being so arrogant? You know, I mean, I just always get this feeling that he thinks he's smarter than everybody. And of course, you know, we want a president who's very smart. But we want a president who can communicate with us that he is smart, but in a way that we understand. It's a very difficult characteristic to convey in a political campaign. I think President Obama has done a very good job of it. I think the master of it was LBJ. Brilliant man, but he was able, and so was Bill Clinton. They were able to tell a story or you know, bring things down to a level that whoever they were speaking to understood. But you knew that they had a deeper understanding of it, but they wanted you to understand it too. And that is something that I think any American is seeking. I think we all want to understand better what's going on with the economy, what's going on with foreign trade, what's going on with education. I think these are all things that are very important to us, and healthcare is another. I think we all want to understand it, but we don't want to be lectured. Nobody likes that. Nobody wants to think that someone else is talking to them like they're stupid. And like I said, I think it's a very difficult characteristic to convey, and especially in our, you know, 30-second world.
Very true. And in keeping with what we've been doing all night, which is pretty much staying in Georgia with our topics, I did want to mention this particular little story so we could talk about it. John Lewis is, of course, greatly admired as an iconic figure. He is a great Democrat. He represents, of course, the 5th District where you live, Catherine, in Atlanta.
Yes.
As we all know, one of the safest Democratic districts in the country, so that any opponent he has generally emerges in Democratic circles. He does have an apparent opponent for next year, Judge Michael Johnson. And there have been some remarks made there. Catherine, you're a constituent of Congressman Lewis. What is going on there with that?
You know, I can't figure out what former Judge Johnson is thinking when he in running against Congressman Lewis. I've, you know, had the pleasure of spending time with Congressman Lewis on a couple of occasions, and I have a couple of close friends who work very closely with him. And one thing that many people might not know about Congressman Lewis is that he loves to campaign. He loves it. He thrives on it. And in years when he doesn't have an opponent, he will go to other places where his friends in Congress are, or in the Senate are running, in order to, you know, fulfill that sort of need and joy that he gets from the campaign trail. So the idea that someone would run against him, and I don't know, maybe Michael Johnson knows this and thinks he's as good a challenger, but there, I mean, the man's energy at even at 71 is unbelievable. And, you know, I feel very, very fortunate that he's my congressman. In fact, it's something that I, when my friends from around the country call me and say, what the heck's going on in Georgia? I just always say, well, Congressman Lewis is my congressman, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, Tina.
But I don't say, you know, there's all this talk about how he's, like, living in the past. I mean, I don't see that. I think he works very hard for the district. I think he works very hard for the country. Sure, he's not. There's been some criticism lately that he's not, you know, isn't in the leadership. And so why, you know, how did he get, why has he been here so long, but he's not in leadership? I sort of think, well, he's working, he's a behind the scenes guy, and he does a lot for us.
Tina, yeah. I was going to ask you about this. You have, of course, worked in a lot of campaigns and stuff, and you know about, of course, Congressman Lewis. He, for instance, he got 3/4 of the vote in his last contested election. Go in the mind of a possible opponent. Why would anyone think, you know what, I can beat this guy? Why would they think that in the 5th District of Atlanta?
I don't know. I really can't figure it. I'm looking. I mean, he's got whatever 65% of the people in his district who will give him a rating, rate him at 100%, and
yes,
you know, you,
right,
which is, I mean, you know, give him 100. So you've got, you know, that's his approval ratings are off the chart, and I can't. If he's going to have it now, is this challenger, is it a Democrat or a Republican? And I'm sorry, I don't know.
He's a Democrat.
He's a Democrat.
Okay.
Democrat.
I'm stunned. I can't see any reason why that he would think he would have a shot at it. I really don't. I think that, you know, I agree with Catherine that he has worked behind the scenes, and I mean, he's been around for a long time, and necessarily being in a role of leadership doesn't necessarily mean anything if you're not taking care of your constituents. So I think, and he's obviously done a very good job with his constituent services, or he wouldn't have that high of an approval rating. So I don't know why that someone thinks that they can would be someone as a challenge. He's had no scandal. There's been nothing going on. So I think that everybody deserves a chance, and maybe this guy maybe this is his get to know you race, because he's wanting something else. And a lot of times you'll see somebody run for something just to kind of get their name out there and say, well, you know, get ready for what they really want. So maybe that's what's going on.
Well, if that's what's going on, this is not the race to do that in.
Definitely not.
I mean, one thing to say, I think I'll run for, you know, mayor, and you know, because the mayor of Atlanta is always a big, you know, there's always like a lot of people running, and it is a way. But running against Congressman Lewis is, I mean, if you think back to the people that have run against him, they tend to disappear. I mean, not. I mean, they just they lose, and then they lose by so much that they don't have any. It's not like they lost by just a couple points, and they come back and say, "Well, I'm going to try running for, you know, lieutenant governor or something." But I mean, that is certainly, when I've talked to people, that is certainly what people are thinking, that he's trying to, you know, feel the sort of get the lay of the land so that he can run for something else. But there isn't that's one of the things about living in a district like Congressional District 5 and in Atlanta. There aren't a lot of things to run for, because the people that are serving are doing a good job, and they've been there for a long time. And so, you know, what I say to people when they say they want to run for office, I ask them where they live, and if they live in, I say, well, if you want to run for office, you should probably move. You know, because it's true. I mean, if you have to, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to run for office, when you're running against a, you know, beloved leader, or, you know, someone else who's serving well and is well-liked and well-funded and all that stuff. So,
well,
it's not all that simple.
This district from, I mean, y'all have got your redistricting coming up in, what, August? So,
yeah.
Is there, I mean, they're not going to, surely this district won't be one that will be messed with.
No,
I mean, there's no,
no
way
they,
this guy
they
has
won't
done,
do nothing.
Okay.
They'll do
well,
nothing
there's some,
to the 5th district.
I mean, they might monkey around with it a little bit, but there's no way they can make it a Republican district, or I mean, there's no way they can change it enough to have any effect on this.
Right.
I mean, there's just no way. It's, you know, solid blue.
Well, because if they go to monkeying around with it too much, they're going to put large blocks of Democratic voters in Republican districts that are trending a little bit toward the Democrats in the donut counties, and
where
they really don't want to do that. So
now, where does Congressman Lewis live in the district? He's not on any of the edges of the district, right? He's solid inside it.
No, he's solidly inside it.
Okay.
And in Georgia, you don't have to live in your district to run in it.
Okay.
My congressman did not live here when he ran here. So anyway, believe it or not, guys, we've gone through like four topics, and the clock on the wall tells me that we have run out of time for this week. We appreciate our guest, Dan Matthews, for being with us. And I would like to say a special thanks to you, Tina, for calling in from the great state of Alabama to help us out tonight.
Well,
please come back and join us.
Pardon?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Good night, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.
Don't say good night.